Black Sabbath there with Paranoid. Prior to that, we had Gothard with The Oscar Goes to You, Rhyme with Keep on Foolin', and Godsmack with Greed. You are tuned into the one and only Metal from Milan show with your Italian DJ Nick, coming at you live on Die Hard Radio, Rampart Radio, Night of the Fallen Angel Radio, and the Rocks Family Saloon in Fubar. And as I announced earlier, we've got an amazing guest tonight, a great, great actor, very talented man. We have none other than Mr. Bernard Robichaud on the phone with us tonight. Hey, hey, Bernard, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. Well, how about yourself?
I'm great, thanks. And I wanted to, of course, thank you very, very much for taking your time out to be on the show. It's a great pleasure to have you.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, Bernard, I guess the very first question I actually wanted to ask you was, what was it, or what would you say was the event that made you want to go into acting and into this business?
I'm not sure that there was an event that kind of, I said, oh, gee, one day the light went off or anything like that. I had been modeling in my late teens, and I had an opportunity to go to Toronto to meet an agent I was recommended to go see. It was a referral. And I went there, and, you know, after about an hour of speaking with her, she had somebody that looked like me on her roster and couldn't use me. But at the end of that, she said, oh, you know, just from talking to you, though, you're missing your calling. If you're going to stay as a model, you should become an actor. And have you ever thought of that? And I kind of laughed. And I said, yeah, me and 10 million other people, I'm sure. And then, you know, because of my spontaneity, I guess, and how quickly I said that, she said, but that's why you should become an actor. And I said, well, you know, thanks very much, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I left Toronto, and I thought about it for several months before I decided that I needed to write to the local university that had a theater school and apply as a mature student and tell them what I was thinking about doing, and in hopes that they would accept me. Of course, they don't have to accept everybody. And it had been 5 years since I had been out of high school at that point. So some time had passed, and I, you know, they kind of want to look and see what you've done in that term to see whether or not, you know, are you a bricklayer or are you an prone for academics.
Yeah,
so anyway, I got accepted, and I went to Dalhousie Theater for their theater arts course, and was accepted, and that's basically how that happened. I went to my audition for the university, and the prof that was running the program at the time told me that I had some raw talent and I'd never be an actor, but if I wanted to go and take the course, no problem, I said. And then, quite frankly, though, that all that did was really kind of piss me off, because I really hated people telling me that what I could and I couldn't do, you know?
Of course.
what do you mean I can't do it? So, and if I can't do it, why are you, you know, allowing me to take the course? I mean, that just kind of seems unprofessional to a certain degree, you know? So anyway, that was it. I took the course for a year. After a year, my voice teacher, who had taught at Stratford, told me I was wasting my time. I had been on my own since I was 16 at that point, so I'd been on my own since for about 6 or 7 years. And she said that she could help put me on the right track, which is what she did. I took lessons from her for 4 years, and private voice lessons, took dance for a year, and then she got me hooked up with an award-winning director, Tom Kerr, at the Neptune Theater in Halifax, and I learned everything that you possibly could learn in the theater by working for them. So That's kind of how it went.
I see.
That was a long story. Holy jeez. Don't ask me anything more like that, man. Holy man.
Oh, well. But
let's keep it down to one or two kind of words, answers.
It's perfect, but I'm actually, other than that, the next question I actually wanted to ask you was, you know, now that you have been an actor for quite some time, there is, you know, one of these sayings, or I guess almost cliches in when it comes to acting, or rather, let's put it as a saying, when they say that art should imitate life. When it comes to you and preparing for a certain role, do you follow that rule, shall we say, or that lesson?
I really kind of feel like acting for me is kind of, you know, if I didn't have any kind of personal experience, I don't think I could take the words off the page and make them my own. I mean, that's pretty much the biggest part of the whole thing, I think, is not to be talking at somebody, but to be talking to them. And I think a lot of mistakes are made, you know, by just reading what's on the page and not really putting any kind of thought into who that character is. Sometimes it's easier, I find, to read from the back to the beginning, and that way it's kind of like a series of dominoes. You kind of can see what pushed the trigger, you know, from, okay, here we are at the end, and how did that happen? And then you can go back and you say, okay, well, that was said. And you start to break it down a lot easier if you kind of got a trigger and effect of what's going on in either a play or a screenplay or even anything that you're reading. I think you can kind of get a feel for who the character is. How you get there and how you decide, you know, obviously certain characters will stick out in your head more so than others. You know, as an actor, you tend to feel a little bit more comfortable with some other than others because you've got personal life experience that enables you to be able to portray that character a whole lot easier than it might be for somebody who's totally opposite. Right. However, on the other flip side of that is, you know, sometimes to play the total opposite is kind of fun because it allows you just to kind of, you know, break ground where you might otherwise not have gone before, you know. So it's number one is the experience as a person and not being inhibited. I think, you know, it's one thing to sit down and say I could be an actor and take the words off the page and do it. It's another thing to take those same words and create and stand on stage in front of a bunch of people that you don't know and or have a camera in your face and 50 people around you trying to make something happen with that and create there. So I think, you know, the biggest thing I think is experience, number one, and number two, to talk to rather than talk at.
Right.
Have a conversation. Yeah.
I see. Well, definitely makes sense to me. And of course, among the various characters that you have portrayed, you know, one of those that you are most well known for, of course, is that of Cyrus from the Trailer Park Boys. And when it actually came to working on becoming Cyrus as well and putting on that character, how did you go about this?
I grew up in a tar paper shack neighborhood.
Right.
So dealing with people like Cyrus, or the character that I played, was kind of it could have been an everyday thing for me, I guess. I just chose to stay within the confines of the chain link fence, which separated me playing basketball or ball hockey from the guys who were out in the parking lot stealing car stereos.
Well, definitely. And what would you say are Cyrus's driving force? What would you say is the main feeling that drives Cyrus?
The character that drives it is himself.
Yeah.
that created the, you know, I kind of always took Cyrus a little bit to the edge where he's almost ADD.
Right.
You know, I really thought of him as, you know, I wanted him to, because of course he's the trailer park and the lack of education. I really felt that sometimes I've known people in the past that had a lack of education. Didn't mean that they weren't smart or even brilliant. It just sometimes I think. You know, you can't get out of your own way when you have those kind of, if you don't have the capacity or the knowledge on how to recognize those things, sometimes you get lost in the shuffle and things become boring for you in just everyday life, and certainly in school where, you know, in grade school it can be very repetitive. And I had some friends that were brilliant and, you know, didn't have much of an education because of those problems, those issues. They just found it boring and because it was so repetitive. That didn't mean that they didn't do well later on in life. They all, you know, ran their own companies and stuff like that. So, you know, I think Cyrus was just the guy that I kind of saw as the guy that didn't quite make it. He had his own ideas about how to make money. Drugs and gun running and women was the main attraction. I just kind of, you know, when you were doing Trailer Park Boys, it was very easy to kind of flow because I think a lot of us had similar backgrounds. And so the cast was just really worked well together. It's very difficult sometimes, I think, to find the cast that kind of, you know, works in such a tight unit like that. But we all kind of were able to feed off one another. I mean, of course, I'm talking about, you know, most of the time it was between me and the three boys any of the trouble hit. But with regard to working with the three boys, Ricky, Julian, and Bubbles, there was just some, I don't know, there was something that clicked, you know, and it was very easy to ad-lib and to just kind of roll with it. And that's what we did. I mean, for the first three seasons, four seasons even, most of it was somewhat scripted, but I mean, that didn't mean that that's the way we were going to shoot it. I mean,
of course,
it really just depended on the day. And, you know, an idea would come up in Mike Clattenburg's head, who directed it. And, you know, we'd run lines for 15 minutes and say, oh, let's try it this way. And, you know, we'd go back and you know, we'd run it totally different. You know, whatever popped out of our head, it was kind of like, you know, you say banana or you say... you just say potato, and I say potato, and away you go. And it was pretty much like that. And Cyrus's character just came along, went along with that. You know, I got the part because I got asked at the last minute to audition. Most of the show was cast. At the time, I was told that Michael Ironside had already been cast for the part, but, you know, the producers and director, Clattenburg, were adamant that they thought that they had somebody that could play this bad guy role. And, you know, I went in to see them, got a call on a Friday night, can I come in on a Saturday morning? And I spent 45 minutes while Mike Clattenburg really verbally abused me, and I just kind of verbally abused him back.
Right.
And on Monday I had the job, so
oh, there you go.
I must have been good at verbally abusing people, at least, you know. Oh. Got that going for me too, you know.
Well, I definitely think that back talking is an art, of course, and so definitely great stuff. Well, we're actually going to be going into some music right now, kind of, I guess, a tribute to Cyrus, to an extent, or rather the character that he is. We're going to be having some George Thorogood with Bad to the Bone, and some Wasp with Mean Man. And of course, we also do have a request with Avenged Sevenfold with The Trashed and Scattered by Luke. This is the Metal from Milan show, and I am, of course, in the company of Bernard Robichaud. We're going to be coming back with him after these three. George Thorogood there with Bad to the Bone. Prior to that, we had Wasp with Mean Man. And we opened that set off with Avenged Sevenfold with Trashed and Scattered, as requested by Luke. And if, like Luke, you have any particular requests, feel free to hit me up in the Die Hard Radio chat room, the Rampart Radio chat room, Night of the Fallen Angel Radio chat room, or the Rocks Family Saloon in the Fubar. I am in the company of Bernard Robichaud, a great, great actor, and we're finding out more about this great, great guy. Well, Bernard, the next question I wanted to ask you was, you've worked between, you know, TV, theatre and cinema, and what I wanted to know was, for you, which would you say has been the most fun experience and which at the same time has been the hardest of the three?
That's a good question. I think hardest just because of the stop and start and wait and game and everything else has been film, although at the same time it's a great medium to work with. My favorite is theater, just because I think the training in theater is, you know, is the cornerstone to any great actor, and it's a more fulfilling experience, because from the time you pick up your book and you start your first rehearsal to your to the end of the run is the character has grown and develops all along the entire stage of the way. And it changes slightly every night because it's live. So there's that, there's a bit of an electricity there of between the cast that develops over time, and it's just a different, fuller experience, I guess. It's the ultimate, in my opinion, I think, doing theater. Equally, I think it's just as difficult to find work in both, but for the ultimate experience, and to, because in film or television, of course, you don't start at the beginning and go to the end. You hop around all over the script. So sometimes if you don't have like a lead or supporting lead role, it's a little bit more difficult to find the motivation if it's 4 o'clock in the morning and a director looks at you and says, you know, walk stealthily across the lawn for me. Right. Okay, man, but it's 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm usually sleeping now. So it's in that regard, I think, and of course, that's part of the difficulty of doing film as well, you know, because they have a day shoot, they can have a night shoot. It just really depends on the scene that you're shooting. So maybe one day you're shooting during the day, and the next day they decide, because of weather or whatever the case might be, that, you know, you're shooting during the night. So anything can happen in that regard. I mean, film, theater, you have your rehearsal run, which, you know, can be early in the morning till, you know, 8 or 9 o'clock at night, let's say. But, you know, in your runs, your show is maybe 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock when the show begins, and it's over at 10:30, and everybody's up at the bar having a scotch. So it's and that's it. You're done for the day. Two different things. More fulfilling for theater, I think. That's just my personal preference as far as it goes, but for me, I've just always gotten film and television. Even though I studied in the theater, it's that's just the way it happened for me, and I'm not sure that I would change that. It's great doing it's great to do theater, and it's great because it helped. I think it allows you to work your craft. It fine tunes it. To some degree, and film and TV, It doesn't even radio. And, you know, there's so many different tricks that you can use in those mediums that can either enhance the voice or they can stick my head on Bubbles' body now with digital cameras and all those kind of things that, you know, with live theater, if you mess up a line, you hope that your person you're delivering the line to has enough wherewithal to recognize that you're stammering there or lost in space, and they deliver part of your line for you so that you can continue on.
Definitely, I definitely think there's a lot of teamwork there going on. And actually, going on as far as your career is concerned, I know that among the latest things that you've done or latest movies that you've been in, there's been American Sunset, in which you played a bounty hunter. And what I wanted to know is, what made you want to be a part of this project, and what was it like playing a bounty hunter?
Well, the bounty hunter wasn't too far away from playing like the bad guy roles that I've generally gotten in the past, so that was okay. The interesting part of that role was that it was twofold. It played the bounty hunter and it plays a corporate lawyer towards the end of the movie, so there's a bit of a twist in the whole thing. And if I tell you much about it, because I'm going out to Las Vegas on Saturday for the premiere of the movie. I think that's the first night in American theaters. Right. So I'm out there for that till next Tuesday. But and so to tell you a little bit too much about it, but basically, the playing that character was the twist of it was interesting for me. Not to mention the fact that, of course, Corey Haim and Frank Molina had the other two male roles that were integral in making the movie what it is. So the bounty hunter and that one was the character of Bob Ferland, who plays the lawyer in this movie. Was what the director had me in mind for. And, lucky and people that believe in me. Jackie Giroux, she's been very good to me in the past. Whenever she's had a production, she's believed in me I've known her for 10 years, and whenever she seems to have a production in place, she gives me a call, and I end up getting something from her, and that's been part of that's why American Sunset. But I mean, I would work for again. I did a movie with her a number of years ago called Cuckoo Cafe, which played a bad guy again. It was a comedy. I played with Barbara Carrera was my girlfriend in that movie.
Right.
And then I just finished a movie that's now out on DVD now, Blue Seduction, with Billy Zane and Estella Warren. And I played Billy Zane's close personal friend in that movie.
Right. Well,
that was another Jacqueline Giroux Global Universal production.
Well, we're actually going to be discussing that here in a few minutes. We're going to be having some more great tunes coming up. We were, of course, talking about bounty hunters. So coming up next, we're going to be having some Stratovarius with Hunting High and Low. We're then going to be following that up with some Hardcore Superstar with Wild Boys. And we're going to be closing that set off with some First Liberation with Whole Lot of Trouble. This is your Italian DJ Nick. You are tuned into the Metal from Milan show. I am in the company of Bernard Robichaud. We're going to be coming back with him after these three songs. First Liberation there with Whole Lot of Trouble. Prior to that, we had Hardcore Superstar with Wild Boys. And we opened that set off with Stratovarius with Hunting High and Low. This is your Italian DJ Nick, and you are tuned in to the one only Metal from Milan show. And I am in the company of the great actor Bernard Robichaud, and we're finding out more about this great actor. Well, Bernard, the next question I wanted to ask you was, we were actually discussing this prior to the break, was one of the latest things that you've actually worked on, which was Blue Seduction, and which is for TV. And as far as this is concerned, could you enlighten us exactly on the character that you play in this?
In Blue Seduction?
That's right.
Yeah, I play a character by the name of Stanley Miles, and he's about as far away from Cyrus as you could possibly get. So which was a nice change for me. It wasn't a bad guy role. It was a very supportive You know, he plays Billy Zane's longtime personal friend and manager, and he's kind of supporting Billy Zane or Billy's character throughout the movie, through one circumstance or another. So, it was a good part, actually. Yeah,
I'm sure it must have been. And what was it like actually working with Billy Zane? Would you say there was a natural synergy between the two of you when it came to working together? How did this collaboration come about?
I didn't have a problem working with Billy. I hope to think that he didn't have a problem working with me. I thought he was very giving. He knew what he wanted. You know, being the lead in the movie and being a co-star, you're trying to work together to get him to where he needs to be. And I'd like to think that I provided that for him to. I think if you can, I don't know if you can download that movie or if it's actually out on DVD now or what the story is with that. But he was a good guy. I thought we got along well, actually. I haven't heard from him since, but that doesn't mean anything. The industry is kind of like that anyway. But it was great working with him. I learned a lot just watching him. I mean, I learned a lot watching everybody that I work with. And I'm a bit of a movie buff anyway, so I probably watch movies differently than most people when they're looking at entertainment. I tend to kind of look at them, pick them apart, and choose the character that I think I'd like to play, and watch some of my favorite actors on TV deliver their lines and move and do what they do. So now working with him, working closely with him was a great experience. And not to mention, I think that together together with Estella Warren, I think we made a great film.
Well, great, great stuff. And actually, as far as the your upcoming projects and upcoming work is concerned for 2010, what is in 2010 for you? What do you have lined up?
Right now, I've got a just developed a comedy show. It's just loosely based around the character of Cyrus. So I start taking that on tour in April. So right now, just really writing and tweaking that. I'm in the process of my second draft in my own screenplay called Kitchen Sports, which is based on the play by the same name that I wrote back in 1995. Kitchen Sports is a story about my life growing up. My dad was an alcoholic and an abusive one, and he was a has-been athlete at the time. Well, not always. I mean, he did still continue to play sports right up until he was probably 40. But during the time that I was in my mid-teens, he was finishing up his career as an athlete. And so Kitchen Sports is really how I made it through that era in my life, and how I overcame not ending up like my dad. Basically, it was kind of like I wrote it in order to hopes that there'd be other kids out there in the same kind of predicament that I was in, with little or no idea of what to do or how to go about it. Fortunately for me, I had athletics, and I think hanging around with a lot of other guys on the hockey team or basketball team enabled me to see what other families were doing. Although, I be honest, it wasn't until, my third long relationship that I really realized, I had heard the same thing two other times before on why they, our relationship was now ending. So, and that, kind of was a psychical kind of thing for me, and I said, and that's when the light bulb went off, and I said, oh man, there's could they all be wrong?
Yeah.
So, and of course they weren't.
Exactly.
So, fortunately I had the wherewithal at that time to go take it upon myself to go talk to somebody that, you know, had a whole lot more knowledge about my past and how I move forward. And you know, kitchen sports is really that sort of, I think it's the story, basically. I think that a lot of us as men grow up with fathers who are, you know, don't like to show love, don't like to, you know, kiss their sons or hug them the same way that they might their daughters. I don't know that that's prevalent now. It probably still happens.
Sadly, I'm sure it does.
I'm sure it does. I think there's a little bit more information out there now, so maybe it doesn't happen as often, or at least if they, you know, they have more knowledge. I know that when my daughter was born, I mean, it was, you know, I mean, I was set up to have a, was thinking son, and I was thinking how I was going to show him how to play sports, and, you know, so there was that whole thing. And now looking back, and I see the relationship that I have with my daughter, I'm kind of glad I have my daughter, because enabled me to explore a side of me that I probably may not have been able to do if I had a young boy. I'm not sure I would have held him and caressed him and taken care of him the same way I did my daughter. I think I would now if I had a son, but I'm not sure that I would have at the time, you know. Maybe I would have, but I'm certainly glad that I had my daughter first, because, you know, there were times where, you know, just seeing the smile on her face, you know, even if you have a bad day and you come home and that, you know, she has so uninhibited, you know, there's such an unconditional love there, you know, it's humbling. It's kind of mind blowing. You know, it's hard to fathom that kind of love exists, really. Certainly as you get older, I'm not sure that you really experience that sometimes from your parents, or at least it's acknowledged or you see it. So I think kitchen sports, because it revolves around that whole man thing, because I think sometimes as guys, when we have a problem, you know, it's easier to give the guy a punch on the arm and say, hey, man, it's going to be all right, don't worry about it, than to kind of actually deal with the problem.
I definitely agree with you there, Bernard. I mean, definitely a very strong point there. Well, of course, I want to thank you very, very much for taking your time out to be on the Metaphor Milan Show. It's truly been a great pleasure to have you. And, of course, I want to wish you the best of luck with all your upcoming projects, of course. And I look forward to having you back as a guest on the show very, very soon.
Anytime, my friend. The pleasure was mine. I had a great time talking with you, and really enjoyed it. It was a good time.
Oh, well, great, great stuff. Well, we're going to be carrying on with some more great tunes here. We are going to be giving you some Pantera with Walk. I then have some Revolution Renaissance with Angel, going out to another special little girl. And we're going to be closing that set off with yet another great indie band. That's going to be some Free Spirit with Pale Sister of Light. A huge thank you goes out to Bernard Robichaud for having been our guest on the show. Be sure to check out his upcoming movies, people. It will be definitely worth your time. Here is Pantera with Walk.